Welcome to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. I'm Susie Colick, the founder of Pretty Deadly Self-Defense, a self-defense program for women I developed based on my experiences as a violent crime survivor and my 23 years of training in the Japanese art of ninjutsu. I'm going to dive right in, and in this episode, talk about teaching self-defense to disabled people. But before I go on, it is almost 2024, and if you have not got your New Year's resolutions together yet, personally, I find that totally okay. But if you have put learning self-defense on your New Year's resolutions list, have I got a deal for you? If you haven't visited our website in a while, we have a brand new site, and it's a lot easier to find our self-defense courses all over the world. Trainers are listing them as we speak, so you can kick off 2024 feeling empowered, confident, able to handle anything, and ready for everything. So back to our episode, how to teach self-defense to disabled people. Here are some facts you might not know about disabled people. Disabled people are 3 times more likely to experience sexual violence and sexual harassment than able-bodied people. Visually impaired people are touched by strangers all day long. People on the autism spectrum and people with Down syndrome also have sexual drives, but not always a healthy understanding of those drives, and their boundaries can easily be compromised. Having multiple disabilities can increase a person's risk of rape and sexual assault, and children with mental health or intellectual disabilities are almost 5 times more likely than their non-disabled peers to experience sexual abuse. And disabled people, regardless of the disability, have a much harder time pursuing legal action against the perpetrators of sexual violence than any other group. Here are some fallacies about disabled people. People in wheelchairs or with prosthetics cannot defend themselves. You cannot teach self-defense to someone with cerebral palsy. Disabled people are asexual. Disabled people cannot control their urges. Disabled people, especially people with multiple disabilities, are unable to participate equally in intimate relationships. All of these myths contribute to a culture in which people with disabilities are more likely to face sexual violence and are often targeted because of their disabilities and not believed because of their disabilities. But people with disabilities also have a right to bodily autonomy, and no one deserves to be a victim of sexual violence. When we're teaching self-defense to people with disabilities, what does that look like? Well, when you have a person with a single disability, it is a little bit easier because you only have one disability that you need to adapt techniques to. I've taught self-defense to people with no or low vision and people with physical disabilities such as MS, multiple sclerosis. I have colleagues who have taught self-defense and martial arts to deaf people, to people in wheelchairs, and to people with prosthetics. All of these things are possible. So what we need to look out for and adapt for with each of these types of disabilities, of course, can be combined for anyone who has multiple disabilities. People with no or low vision actually are, in my opinion, the easiest people to teach, even among fully abled people. Simply because people with no or very low vision are very attuned to their bodies and very attuned to the world around them. That doesn't mean that they feel comfortable in defending themselves from all the helping hands that are always reaching out. But it does mean that they can be more sensitive of when someone is drawing too near or when that hand is friendly or not friendly. Be prepared if you're working with people with low or no vision for them to actually make quite rapid progress as long as you keep the training based within their own bodies. That's the space they know best. So you want to take a very user-focused approach when teaching self-defense to people with low or no vision. Teaching self-defense to people with hearing impairment, again, has certain advantages over working with fully able-bodied people, simply because, again, like people with no or low vision, they're very much inside their bodies. One of the biggest advantages of working with people with hearing impairment is balance. balance is something that they happen to be really, really good at. And they tend to be very structured and very, very solid. So when we're teaching self-defense to people with a hearing impairment or complete deafness, we want to focus on where that solidity is, where their solid structure of balance is, and how to translate that into movement that's very powerful, but still very stable. Teaching people with a physical disability, such as a multiple sclerosis, or people who wear a prosthetic, or people who are unable to use a particular part of their body, all share something in common, in that their center of balance is adjusted for whatever shape their body is taking at that moment. Once you're able to locate where their center of balance is, it's easy enough to adjust techniques around that center of balance. Sometimes the people with these types of disabilities really cannot go beyond their own range of motion and find it very, very painful even to get to the edge of that range of motion. So when working with people with these kinds of disabilities, we really need to work very, very slowly and very, very gently. And again, focus on solidity of structure, stability, all around where their balance is. It can often help to do exercises to identify where that center of balance is, not only for them, they probably already know it, but they may not be completely cognizant of it, meaning they might just take it for granted, but it also helps you so that you know how to adapt the techniques. Teaching self-defense to people who are confined to wheelchairs is also really about center of balance, because what has to be taken into account here is the chair itself. The chair can work as an extension of the body that's sitting in it if, again, you know how the chair is balanced and how it manipulates and moves. Of course, the person in that wheelchair is going to know that much better than you, so you may want to ask them to give you a little bit of a demonstration if they're able to, so that you can see what range of flexibility you have working with the person in that chair as those two elements can work together. It's really all about balance when working with people with disabilities. And again, if you're working with someone who has multiple disabilities, or you are someone with one or more disabilities and you'd like to learn self-defense, the framework that you want to be learning in and the framework that you want to be teaching in is the framework of balance, structure, stability, and range of motion. Once you're able to determine those things, either for yourself or for the person that you're working with, if you're the trainer, everything else follows pretty easily. If you're working with people on the autistic spectrum or people with Down syndrome, there are two different things to take into account. And actually, I shouldn't join those two groups together. People with Down syndrome tend to be quite strong, and they also tend to have a very low center of balance. So that's something to keep in mind. Techniques for people with Down syndrome should remain fairly simple, mainly not because they can't handle anything more complicated, but just because they're very powerful. And again, something that you, when teaching techniques, you do want to go slow so people can control their motor skills while they're learning the techniques before they learn how to control the power. People on the autistic spectrum, especially if you have people with more severe cases of autism who really are unable to determine what their own boundaries are or haven't been given those tools yet, need to start out with some simple games regarding that. We may not be able to rely on the same tools we might use with children, for example, to listen to their feelings or try and identify a sensation in the body. So it can be helpful to refocus boundary training first before we get to self-defense training on large visual cues. Sometimes you might need to help a person make those connections and make those cues, make those connections so that they can tell when there may be a dangerous situation that might not otherwise be obvious. Often repetition can help. Usually any kind of dance choreography to music is also a really powerful way to help people on the autistic spectrum learn self-defense techniques. And this brings us to the end of the Pretty Deadly Podcast Season 7 for 2023. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening, for the guests that we've had on our show, for everyone who's attended our workshops, courses, seminars, talks, TikToks, Instagrams, every single thing that we do, for the new trainers that have joined us, and all of you who are working hard to fight for change and change the fight. Happy New Year, and see you in 2024. You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do You have been listening to the Pretty Deadly Podcast. You can learn more about who we are and what we do and how to find a Pretty Deadly course near you by visiting our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com. And if you're interested in teaching self-defense to your community, our certification programs are open for enrollment, and you can find them on our website at prettydeadlyselfdefense.com/self-defense-trainer, all one word. This podcast is produced by Singe Network for Pretty Deadly, recorded in Berlin, and our original music is the track Icarus Wish by Berlin-bound Dead Sun Trees, used with permission of the artists.